Welcome to Stories of Stories. I'm your host, Mike Chin. In each edition of this podcast, I explore the stories behind a specific creative project, process, or experience. I'll be talking about these projects on the show with the expectation that either you're already familiar with the project I'm talking about. So, for example, if it's a story, you've already read it, or you do not plan to read it. Regardless, what I'm trying to get at is this podcast will include spoilers, so please listen no further if you don't want anything spoiled. This episode, I'll be discussing The End of the World. The End of the World is a short story I published with Front Porch at the end of 2016. This is a story that occurred to me at first in the summer of 2015. I often look back at that as one of the worst summers of my life. I was working in what was sort of a dual leadership role, kind of doing two different positions for a summer youth program. And it was an unusual employment situation, and ended up working pretty consistently in excess of 90 hours a week in that position and going on about 5 or 6 hours of sleep a night, which I know is okay for some people. I'm one of those people who really can use that, 7 to 8 hours of sleep on a consistent basis. I was financially well compensated for my efforts. I don't necessarily regret having had the experience. I got to work with some great people, but it was definitely also a draining experience. Ultimately, it wasn't a lot of fun, and particularly at that point, I was halfway through my MFA experience, and so I was really trying to privilege my writing time and have that be a consistent part of my life, and found that really making maximum effort, waking up early and squeezing things in between meetings, I was able to pull out about maybe 15, maybe 20 minutes a day of writing on average, and was really kind of desperately scraping for that. But during that time, I did have some ideas for stories that I jotted down. So a lot of the work I was doing was, more of kind of my casual writing for kind of blog purposes, or picking away at kind of things that might later become stories, but not really trying to shape them into substantial pieces at the time. But I had some ideas that I was really passionate about during that time. And there was this one in particular, The End of the World, that actually interlocked with another story. And I had conceived of these two stories being almost, sequel to one another when I conceived of them. And it was dark. And it occurred to me right around Independence Day and thinking about what I'd heard about how that's a day when pets are particularly prone to run away from home, usually because they're scared of the 4th of July fireworks. And that's actually a factoid, or I don't actually know that that's completely true. I assume it is. It seems logical enough, but that actually did get built into the story and kind of some throwaway dialogue early on that sort of sets up some ambiance and kind of establishes some themes around animals in the story. And they're kind of a recurring motif throughout it, from some birds in the sky early on to a cat that kind of closes the first scene, to a dog that's sort of metaphorical towards the end of the story, to some animal-like behavior kind of between some of the characters. Ultimately, this is a story about sexual assault between two high school boys, and I wrote the first draft of it very quickly. I wrote this kind of coming out of that summer. I had this brief period where I was really sick directly after the summer. I think some of it was just kind of my body giving up after all the stress and the lack of rest. But kind of coming out of that, I kind of started writing with a fury, and I think I tried to make up for lost time, and did some of the writing that I was happiest with in a long time during that period. I guess had a lot of kind of pent up creative energy, and kind of getting the chance to turn that loose really led to a lot of work happening in those first few weeks to a month or so out of that position. As I mentioned, kind of this is a story that deals with some really difficult subject matter. And in that first draft that I wrote, it was portrayed pretty graphically and pretty directly. There was no sugarcoating it. There was very little metaphor around it. It was just kind of when it got to that point in the story, really literally kind of describing the experience of what had happened there. And it was both hard to write, but also something I was really proud to have gotten down, because it was sort of telling a story that I didn't feel like had been told very much at that point, but that was an important one. I don't look at things, like assault or like abuse that people may endure, or traumas, for entertainment value by any means. But I think these are stories that's important that we pay attention to, because they are real and they are some people's reality. And you know, I come from a place of privilege where I don't have these specific experiences to refer to, or to, you know, to kind of to empathize with in my own, you know, direct life experience. But I think thinking about them, acknowledging that some people are kind of living with this, you know, is important. And I think on top of that, this kind of feeds into some other work that I've been doing, writing particularly about LGBT characters. You know, not out of any trying kind of effort to be exploitive. This is something I grappled with a little bit is, you know, am I kind of, you know, exploiting this when I'm not a part of this community, kind of using this for creative material? But what I've come to over and over again is thinking that, you know, people from underrepresented, you know, demographics of any nature, are still people. You know, and so the fact that stories haven't been told about them, first of all, it's just kind of an injustice or kind of a blind spot for literary canon. But beyond that, also there's just some unexplored territory to think about and to write about. You know, because writing about these characters in this kind of traumatic situation, in and of itself, it was new for me, and I think a story worth telling. But in some ways, all the richer because there were these added layers to it of, you know, this is both a story of trauma and assault and kind of a betrayal. But also on top of all of that, it's kind of with the embedded, you know, secrecy and kind of shame that goes with, you know, maintaining this sexual identity that is a secret at that point in both of these young men's lives. So, you know, I wrote this story, handed in as part of the first draft of my thesis for my MFA program to my mentor, Marjorie Sander. And it was, you know, a story that I was a little bit nervous about giving her because I knew that, you know, with the graphic material, you know, regardless of how she felt about the quality of the story, there was still a real chance that it might not be something that she found kind of, you know, appropriate for this content. I was kind of ready to go in different directions if that turned out to be the case. But what she came back to me with was kind of, you know, talking to me about this concept of defamiliarization, which I kind of heard in passing, I had kind of vague understanding of, and she really got me thinking a lot more intensively about. She shared some essays with me. She printed them out and kind of got them to me indirectly at the time. And actually, it's something that I've never told her or admitted to many people, but I actually lost my copies of what she'd printed out for me pretty early on before I'd really consumed the majority of it. Ended up doing some backwards kind of work of trying to you know, recollect that information because I was so kind of you know, mortified that had happened. I'd been irresponsible with it. And kind of gathering the concept for myself, and you know, figuring out what she was trying to get across without having read entirely, you know, what she'd intended for me to. But you know, figured out this concept, and kind of some of the main ideas of it are just kind of taking content and putting it out of its natural kind of habitat. And so, you know, taking an image or taking an idea and reapplying it to something wildly divergent from what it was originally intended for, or what it's actually representing, but kind of, you know, personalizing it to a situation or customizing it for a really different purpose. And so, you know, w was thinking about that concept, and the other side of it is kind of tackling kind of unsavory issues, you know, kind of things that you are difficult to explain in an explicit way, or that aren't going to get the same reaction from a reader when they're addressed explicitly, as opposed to tackling them from something that's more accessible, whether it's, you know, again, more savory or more image-based, but something that is, you know, a little bit less literal, but kind of works its way around to get at the idea in a purer state. So in particular, you know, the scene of this assault that's kind of the climax of this story, you know, that was the part where it wasn't really working yet, where you know, I felt good about, you know, having been able to maneuver my way to writing that in an authentic way. But it was just kind of too explicit, too graphic, too direct, the way it originally had been drafted. So I started thinking about other ways of representing that. And as often the case, I think in stories, it's one of the things that, you know, as a teacher of creative writing, I tell students and I need to kind of take my own advice on. A lot of times the answers are embedded in the text itself. This was a story that was all set on Independence Day, and I even have characters watching the movie Independence Day in one point of it. And that was kind of just mentioned in passing, just kind of a throwaway line in that early draft. But an image from that film of the alien autopsy that they do, where they're kind of peeling back this membrane and over the alien's head before the alien kind of wakes up. That became a real central image for this story in the most unlikely ways, where kind of that ripping of that membrane came to replace the experience of that assault. So that led to a pretty significant revision, especially the latter half of the story. I kind of gutted and kind of replaced a lot of that imagery and kind of tried to make it a bit fluid between the two. And ultimately felt it was a really big success, and that was the crux of revising this story at that point. Actually ended up being really probably my favorite story in the thesis project, and the strongest story that I feel I've written without the influence of a writer's workshop full on, with really just me kind of writing it and with one trusted advisor kind of helping to guide the way on how to tackle a revision of it. And those tools that Marjorie kind of suggested to me about, you know, defamiliarization in particular, that really became a central part of my toolkit moving forward. It's something I've gone back to a number of times, because one way or another, I tend to find myself writing about these difficult kind of inappropriate kind of topics that are hard to write on straight on. And I think this has given me a really valuable tool to kind of approaching it and approaching these kind of difficult scenarios in novel ways, because most people aren't going to defamiliarize in the same way. So, a story where kind of an alien autopsy stands in for a rape, that's doesn't have a lot of precedent. I don't want to say it's completely unheard of otherwise, because I'm sure that someone will find a text that does that other than mine, but was the first time I'd encountered it at least. So after I finished, the thesis project, and as I was kind of finishing up grad school, I began sending this story out to a lot of journals that I really respected. I got some good, personalized rejections early on, and I was really gratified that, within that first few months of sending it out, I was able to find a home for it with Front Porch, which is a journal I really admire, out of Texas State. Part of that process, it's interesting because I'd already, revised that story, and felt really good about it, felt that it had kind of gone through its paces. But when it was accepted conditionally with this idea that the fiction editor there was really interested in seeing the first two scenes of this story condensed, and thought that the story started a little bit too slow and these scenes were doing a lot of the same things, or some of the things that second scene was doing weren't as effective for the overall momentum of the story. They were kind of nice texturing or nice characterization, but ultimately not worth it for what they were doing to the pacing of the story. And when I first read that edit, I was a little bit reluctant. I was sort of thinking to myself, I'd love to have this story featured in this journal, but that's not an edit I want to take lightly. But the funny thing is, looking at it, this is probably about 5 or 6 months out of doing that last meaningful revision on the story. You're looking at it with fresh eyes. I actually thought that consolidating those scenes was a great idea. It really to keep up the momentum of the story, and I feel like it made the story even sharper and made the turns the story made that much more surprising. I was really happy with what ended up happening when I took the editor's advice and certainly took some liberties with it, and didn't take all the advice in its purest state, but kind of took and cherry picked what I thought were the best parts of the scene that ultimately ended up getting cut and transplanting them into the first scene. But I was actually really happy with how that final product turned out. So now that full story is available for free online. It's in Front Porch's archives now, and still available and free to the public. Okay, so that's about a wrap on The End of the World. So now it's time for Mike's monthly endorsement. So as an artist, I do feel it's important to be consuming other things, to see what interests and inspires you and see what's already out there and see what's come before. So at the end of each episode, I've recommended a book, a story, a movie, a TV show, a band, a wrestling match, or anything along these lines that may have escaped huge mainstream audience or that may be a little dated now and on the cusp of being forgotten, but that I recommend. So in this case, I wanted to call to everyone's attention a short story by Randa Jarrar. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. But this is a short story called Lost in Freakin' Yonkers. It's from the collection Him, Me, Muhammad Ali from Saraband Books. And this story is just a fascinating one to me. It's largely a character portrait. It's not kind of that the plot itself is really going to kind of change your perspective on things necessarily or kind of surprise you with any huge turns. But the character is just so sort of jarring and sort of unique for my estimation. That's really a story that struck me the first time I read it and has stuck with me since. So again, it's largely, a character portrait. It opens on a pregnant woman who's trying to masturbate because she's heard it can bring about labor sooner. And she's struggling to reach down to touch herself. And that opening in and of itself is kind of representative of what this story does moving forward from that point. It's a difficult story on a lot of levels, and that's part of what makes it so successful. It absolutely nails the voice. It doesn't shy away from anything about this, sort of deadbeat character or deadbeat situation with her deadbeat boyfriend. And the narrator is just so unapologetic and so authentic, almost daring you to judge her. And I think that that just works so well in this story. And I think that it pairs well with The End of the World. So again, we're kind of talking about stories where, if you just kind of talk about the premise to, any old person off the street, this probably doesn't make them leap out of their chair and say, oh man, that's like a really fun story I want to read. But I think it is an important story, and I think it's well told and just so compelling with the voice that it generates. So again, it's called Lost in Freakin' Yonkers by Randa Jarrar, and I'm not sure if it's out there in the world in any journals or online at this point, but it was available through her collection of short stories, Him, Me, Muhammad Ali. All right, well, as always, I want to give a special thanks to Mike Peake for providing the theme music for this show, and I want to thank you all for listening. That's all for this time, but I'm wishing you all good health, happiness, and creativity, and I'll catch you next time.